Welcome. Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or a favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they are archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about handling problems and finding solutions. And of course, that's something that we do all the time because we want to reach a successful outcome and, well, quite frankly, we're dealing with people. And when you deal with people, you've got some problems that kind of crop up with negotiation. And so we're going to think calmly and get to a solution that allows us to go forward, to reach our successful outcome, allows us to reach consensus, allows us to, well, I know it's a dirty word, but allows us to compromise, right? Yeah, allows us to understand that we're going to have to give a little to get a little, which is what compromise is. We're going to have to, well, accept that we can't have everything we came in wanting, but we're going to get some and we're going to get a real good workable outcome. Yes, because quite frankly, at Recipe for Peace Now, we do not consider something a workable outcome if the words agreed in principle are involved. Ooh, that means that we're not really doing anything practical. We're not really getting something done. We're not really getting together and working towards a solution to a problem. We're just giving it lip service because we couldn't get any further. No, 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 no. We are going to do much better than that, which will, of course, enhance our reputation greatly. Right? Right. Yes. So we're going to ask the usual question, right? The general question, because this is not a scripted show. So what, some of you already answered, this is so lovely of you. What problems do we as leaders need to find solutions to? Yeah, what do we see? What do we got? Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm going to, this is being phrased like this, and I think it's a reasonable thing. It's how to ask the right questions. Lee says, how to ask the right questions. Yeah, you have to know what questions to ask in order to get to the right answers, to get to the answer that will really tell you something, right? Right. Mm-hmm. And I think a real corollary to that is how to develop empathy. And remember that empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement. Empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement, right? Yes. Mm-hmm. And, yes, that has to do with questions, doesn't it? Because we're going to go ask, well, it's not, we could skip ahead for a second. We're going to ask the 5W questions, aren't we? Who, what, where, when, and why? And then we'll discuss that in more detail. But asking questions as well as answering them will lead us to understanding and to understanding where it is that we could really come together. What it is that will really be a workable outcome. What success looks like, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. What problem do we have? Maybe we're having a little problem enforcing the civility rules, right? Mm-hmm. The civility rules are the only rules the Recipe for Peace Now really has. And basically speaking, they say we will not be rude to each other. We're going to have a respectful, convivial atmosphere for our group dynamic, right, right, so that everybody wants to be here and feels of value, right, because everyone is of value. Mm-hmm. So they wouldn't be here. So we're having a little problem enforcing that. Let's talk about that in a moment. I'm going to call this going beyond the preconception of failure. People are talking about, and thank you all for your participation, people are talking about having participants having maybe even media, which, of course, the media creates public opinion, that this is not going to work. We cannot do this. It's never been done before. It's never going to be done in the future. This is hopeless, right? A preconception of failure. We're just going to do like every other group did and go through the motions because it seems like a good thing to do. But it's not really, and we're not going to get anywhere. No, we don't do those kind of groups as leaders, right? We're going to go beyond the preconception of failure. Yes, sometimes the group has failed before, and you're the new leader on it. I have that. We'll talk about that. We're also going to need to have the problem of what success looks like. Let's have a solution that defines success. Let's decide how we're going to get that, for one thing. And then I'm going to call this comfort zone. People are talking about having to get people to do something that they don't want to do. And what you're really talking about is you're making people expand their comfort zone, right? The comfort zone is how things have always been done. And it's comfortable. And everybody expects it. And it's easy. And it's hard to be a pioneer, right? And go off into the wilderness and say, follow me. I think that what we've always been done, that's always worked in the past, is not it anymore. I want to change. That's why I explain to people, even if it's kind of stretching it, but I explain to people that we still are doing things like they've already been done, always been done. We're still in our comfort zone. We're just going to expand it, and we'll discuss why. Because sometimes it needs to be, right? Yes, sometimes organizations, people, ideas, get workable solutions, get bogged down in historical tradition, right? And it could be their own historical tradition, like a corporation or something has a way that things have been done, and kind of a guideline that was perhaps set by a founder 100 years ago. Yeah, if it's not bad, and what I explained is we are not abandoning the guideline, the comfort, it's usually not called the comfort zone, but that's what it is, right? And we're not abandoning it, right? No, nobody wants to abandon it and go running off naked. No, we are expanding on it, right? And quite frankly, if you look at it that way, most long-standing guidelines, most long-standing comfort zones are at their base kind of moral precepts, the way we deal with the world, right? Yeah. And we can work with that because we're still moral people. We're still good people. It's just that we are now more modern and things have changed. I don't know, women have the vote. No, never mind. But it is, you've got to go forward, but also with an eye to the morality of always. Nothing wrong with that. I like a good comfort zone. So let's start in before we run out of time. And the first thing that we're going to talk about that we have a problem with and we need a solution is asking the right questions. Yes. Oh, it's so good that people are saying this. Mohammed and others are saying that there are no wrong questions. This is truth. There are no wrong questions. What we're really saying is that we need specifics on what's going on because we're not sure, right? We want to know what's going on. And so we get to ask questions. But also our participants need to know what's going on. And they need to feel free to ask questions. You've given instructions, right? Yeah. You've told them the process and like that and the civility rules, which we're going to get to. And you've given instructions about what it is that they're supposed to do, what their obligations are, right? Well, first of all, they're going to need to ask a lot of questions because they haven't understood the instructions. They think they've understood the instructions, and you think they're the clearest instructions anyone on the face of the earth has ever given anyone, right? I mean, how could that possibly not be understood? And the answer is that it wasn't, because it was interpreted by the mind that heard it, right? Yeah, we all do that. It was once pointed out to me that when you read something, it is read in your voice, in your head, right? Yeah. And that's how listening is. That's how reading is. That's how everything is. It more has to do with the listener than the speaker, the reader than the writer, right? Which means that if you give an instruction one time, unless it's very, very basic, like where's the bathroom, believe me, you'll get that asked a lot, considering that you told everybody. But that's instructive, right? You need to reinforce what needs to be done as leader. You need to give the instructions. I like to give actual instructions, actual assignments in writing, because then we can read it over and understand how to interpret it, right? Yeah. And it gives us a reason to look at them again to make sure that I wrote them clear enough, right? Yeah. Not you're too dumb to figure out what to do, but I am not certain that I was clear and specific enough in my instructions. Right? Right. It's a politeness. It's a civility. Right? And, all right, some of you, I suppose it goes to leadership style. Some of you are saying that to do that, to put it down and say, let's talk about this. Excuse me. Pardon me. Pardon me. Sorry about that. Oh, thank you. People are going, bless you. Thank you. Some of you are saying that's weakness. It is indeed a leadership style that is more conciliatory than didactic. Now, that is indeed more towards my style. Now, when necessary, because leadership styles change, well, they modify. I don't know if you can go completely opposite to what you usually do, because it's in your nature. But you can modify your leadership style depending on the situation. For example, you can give instructions that are very specific, and then you can make sure that people understand them. As in, you can say, and repeat to me what you're going to do. I have seen that done. In my opinion, it has to be done in a very polite and civil manner. I have seen it done in kind of a demanding manner. That's okay. It's not generally my style. It is effective in the short run. It is effective if what you're doing is time sensitive, and then it's over, and you don't have to work together again. They don't got to like you. They just got to do it, is the theory to it. That is a very effective style for that. Yes, you all know this. Hang on a second. I got to blow my nose because I sneezed. Hang on. It shows it's a live show, right? Right. Hang on. Hello, I'm back. Yes, hello. It's kind of like, oh, yeah, it's a live show. But anyway, so it's good. It's good under certain circumstances. I've seen people do it for long range because it's their style. Not so much. People, unless they're truly obligated to be there, people get kind of sick of that kind of style. It's kind of military. And if, like the military, your people are very disciplined and they're of a certain mindset, it might work out well. In fact, you might be in the military or some sort of an organization like that. I do mostly negotiations where I coax people into understanding that it's an excellent idea, and darn, it was their idea besides, right? And we need to reach consensus and work together for long periods of time that are fluid, which means that over the time period, things might change, things might shift. And we as a group, as a team, need to be able to shift with it. You see, that's an entirely different idea, different way of approaching things, right? Right. So in a sense, you have to look to the long game. Yes, and modify your style. Sometimes leadership style gets modified by the needs of the participants or maybe even the needs of the media, which is the public, because never forget the media makes public opinion. Sometimes you modify your style due to expectations. There are some organizations that are really hierarchical, and they have strict ideas, strict rules of how things should be. It's not just a comfort zone. It's how you act, how it is. Sometimes it is cultural. Pardon me. And it's no secret that I'm in the United States and I'm an American. We do usually have a more democratic approach, but some countries do not. They want the leader to lead, as in tell us what to do, what we should decide, and we will do it effectively and efficiently. It's a different mindset. It takes somewhat of a different leadership mindset too. You can do it, I can do it, but I have to think about it, right? I have to think about which mindset is it that we are using, because sometimes I have to help people to implement across cultural diversity. Not only actual cultural diversity, as in we're in different countries and of different backgrounds, but corporate cultural diversity, because I'm dealing with the same level of employment in different areas, in different countries, and they attack a problem differently. It's just a statement of fact, really, right? Yeah. And it is important to understand that. Important to understand that, whoa, we're getting this. It's just, it's going to take us a minute, right? Yeah. We're going to have to really think about this. We're going to have to work on it. We're going to have to see if this is in tune with how we view the world, with how things should be, right? And how things should be is really an opinion more than anything else. This is how the world should work. Well, does it? I don't know, but this is how it should, right? Yeah. And that makes a big difference. It does. Mm-hmm. So you have to ask the right questions and answer the right questions. And you need to keep track of the process, too. Because you've promised people a smooth process, right? Yeah, it's part of your charms. And sometimes, no matter how many times you've repeated an instruction, and my personal rule is never repeat it the exact same way twice. You ever see anybody that says the exact same words, only louder each time? No. This is a sure sign that the instructions are not theirs, and they don't understand them either. No. We're going to repeat the instructions, what needs to be done in different ways. I say 4 times for it to sink in. Then, during the process, because people are not always looking at each other, right? They're going off to do things, their assignments. We need them to check in periodically. You set the timetable to make sure that they really are, A, doing it, but, B, that they're really on track, that they've understood what they're supposed to do, and, by golly, they're doing it, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so you need to keep track. Yeah, the question is, who keeps track? The answer is maybe in the beginning, you, because you don't have any employees, you don't have any money. But when you get more successful and you get more clients, you will not have time to keep nitty-gritty track of stuff. You're going to need an assistant. I recommend someone who you pay extremely well and is very efficient, because you will depend on them, right? Yes. And they have to be kind of self-starters, because if you wanted to do it yourself and really hang over them and point a lot, maybe in the beginning, but not after a while, well, gee, you'd do it yourself and save the salary, right? Yeah. I mean, so you need to understand that they need to be able, competent, to work autonomously, to work, to really keep track and report back to you how it's going, right? Right. Mm-hmm. Yes, I like interns. Not for this. We have interns. They're fabulous. I think even if you are not well-established in your field, because some of you are not, you're new, I think that you should be fussy about who you have as an intern. Fussy, yeah. Because we actually have an interview process as though we are going to pay you real money. Because the interns can be kind of a pain. We only take people who are getting an advanced degree, like a master in business, an MBA. We only take people who are really interested, hopefully referred by someone we trust. Usually other interns refer somebody for the post, the position, because they go off and become adults, right? And then they come back and volunteer. It's fabulous. But they stay friends. But they go off and have real lives, because interns are students usually. And we require that they be able to do it for a year minimum, because it takes some training. And it takes some getting used to us all the way around, us to them, them to us, right? And by the time everybody has settled in and knows what they're doing, if it's a four-month stint or a three-month stint, well, darn it, you're gone. Yeah, we haven't had any benefit is what it really is, and neither have you, the intern, because they haven't really been able to think on their own. Everybody watched them like a hawk, right? Yeah. So it's important to have paid people who really know what they're doing, and then interns who are adults and can stay for a while. Oh, okay, I will modify the statement. It depends, I suppose, that's true, what you're doing. If you're truly setting up, as in tables and chairs and food and like that, and the prize for helping set up is you get to watch the program for free, right, and get some college credit, but like that, that's different kind of work than what I consider to be an intern. That's like being a volunteer, right? Yeah. You set up, and as a treat, you also get to stay and mingle and learn things and, I don't know, have a snack, except now with the coronavirus, there are no snacks. And like that. Yes, we are in the United States mainly, and even in other countries, we are doing everything online, on Skype and somewhat on Zoom. Although I personally find that Zoom has a little bit less strong a connection. I don't know why. Maybe more people are using it is what it really is, probably. Mm-hmm. So that's good, too. So we're going to ask the right questions. We're going to listen carefully. And here's the next thing we're going to have. We're going to have empathy, right? And empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement. How are we going to get that understanding? Yes, we're going to ask questions, for heaven's sakes. How else are we going to know anything, right? We're going to ask the 5W questions. Who, what, where, when, and why? Who, what, where, when, and why? Right? Yeah. And we're going to listen carefully to the answers. And we're going to watch the body language, right? Yeah. Who, what, where, when, and why? Do we ask them all in that order? Not necessarily. Do we ask them all at once? Not necessarily. Do we ask them somewhere along the line? Yeah, I think so. Because they will allow us to understand what is going on. Mm-hmm. They will also allow us to understand if we have what Recipe for Peace Now calls invisible participants, right? Yeah. They are people, usually people, could be a board, I mean, could be an organization. They are someone, something, that our participants, one of our, maybe some of them, maybe all of them, our participants are listening to, who are not actually in the room. That's why they're invisible, right? Yes. But they're influencing how our participant reacts. Mm-hmm. Now, is it a formal report of some sort? Well, not necessarily, but it's something that's causing the participant that's in the room to feel obligated, to feel pressured, to feel like this is the right way to do something and the other ways are not, right? Right. That's what we've got. Excuse me, I'm going to take a sip. Hang on. Hanging on. Hanging on. Pardon me. There we go. Yes, every time someone gets a sniffles, people are like, are you okay? Have you got the coronavirus? Are you going to die? Well, I certainly hope not. And I have been wearing a mask, yes. It's very, very weird, but you get used to it. Isn't that funny? So they're invisible participants. We like to find out about them. That's how you ask the 5W questions. And especially who? Who told you that? Who? What? What did they say? Where did you hear it? When did you hear it? Why did they think that? And why did you react that way, right? All asked very politely. All asked with leadership discretion, as in one after another, in that order, in front of everybody, privately, whatever. Whatever it is that will get the best result and the most empathy and understanding. Remember, we all have to have understanding for each other, not just the leader, for one participant, too, yeah? Mm-hmm. So the invisible participants, we like to invite them in, right? Yes, come. Ah, the questions being asked are invisible participants the same as anonymous participants? The answer is not usually. Although sometimes, I mean, it depends, there's a crossover. Usually invisible participants are influencing, are impacting the outcome, impacting the response of somebody who's actually a participant. Anonymous participants are usually those who connect oftentimes with the leader, and they are more like experts. They want to tell us something. They want to lead us somewhere. They want to inform us of something, usually something we'd like to know, but they don't want their name involved in it. They want you to keep them out of it, but they think you should know, right? Right. No, not usually because of something bad. People are going, are they criminals? Well, hopefully not, because I don't like dealing with criminals. I never dealt with that kind of law. Hang on. Usually, the anonymous participants are people who have something to lose if it doesn't work out, right? They are part of the status quo, for example. They've got a really good job, and they like it. They think that you're right and something should be changed. But just in case the change doesn't occur, they don't want anyone to know that they kind of rocked the status quo, right? Yeah, because they want to keep their job, usually. Or their social position, for example. Yeah, that too. Yeah, their level of respect, right? Their friends. I don't know, whatever it is. Uh-huh. They could see the point. They think that something should change, but they don't want to be the one that's the front person. That's your job, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. A lot of times, I actually encourage people to come and talk to me. I have the reputation, and you must too, of keeping a confidence. If you don't keep a confidence and you breach anonymous, you tell people who told you, right? No one will ever trust you again. Your reputation will be shot. I will not tell who told me, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's anonymous. Now, I might urge the person to come forward. That would be good, right? But I will not out them. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise, no one will ever tell me anything again. Because word gets out. Uh-huh. I encourage people to come and talk to me, to give me opinions, to tell me stuff, because I really don't like unintended consequences. And oftentimes that's what the anonymous participant is trying to tell us. If you do that which you are planning, or one of your plans, if you do that, this will happen as a result, and you're not considering it. You're not bringing it into the mix, right? Yeah. Very important. I really, really, really want to know if there's going to be an unintended consequence that we didn't think about because we plain ordinary didn't know about it, right? Yeah. We didn't realize that this would cause, I don't know, fill in the blank, an entire species to go extinct. Things happen. We try not to have unintended consequences. It's one of my real big no-nos, right? Yes. Which is why we call in experts, right? Also, experts help with the empathy because they're impartial third parties that can explain stuff. Because sometimes you're the wrong person to explain something. You're the wrong person to say this is how we're going to do it because this is what needs to be done, right? You need an impartial third-party expert to come in and say, oh, this is what needs to be done. We need to be flexible about it. We need to change our preconceptions, right? Change our preconceptions. Mm-hmm. Yes. And so it's very important to have experts come in oftentimes because they break the impasse. I personally like competing experts. I like experts from every side because I want to hear their justifications. I want to hear why they think that. I've had experts actually reach consensus in the middle between them in front of us. It's fabulous. They're kind of like, really? Well, in that case, yeah. And it's like magic. It's like, oh, that's what we're supposed to do. Fabulous, we'll do that. So we use experts. The question is being asked, who do I use as an expert? Who's an expert? The answer is we all are experts on something, right? Excuse me. We're all experts on something. And we all know something, which means our participants could have some expertise. But I personally, and this is my bias, I like an expert who has done it before, who's on the ground, who's really got a practical working knowledge. I actually even value, in fact, I particularly value, I'm afraid, people who failed before but are still interested in the outcome. And oftentimes, circumstances have changed. And the reason they failed was because they were too early, right? Yeah, circumstances have changed. And so it's kind of like, oh, well, now this would be acceptable, right? Yeah, we can all think of things where the law has changed, especially in the United States. as public opinion changes. And never forget that the media creates public opinion. The media creates public opinion. You think you create it? No, the media does. The media and the employer. Remember, on this show, we use a generic term, the employer, to identify anyone who had the good sense to bring us in. The employer is whoever it was that had the good sense to bring us in, make us the leader, right? It is not necessarily designate an employment relationship. Not necessarily an employment relationship. Just whoever it is that brought us in, right? Right. Mm-hmm. I like an expert. So employers like to see credentials. Credentials, it makes them happy. The media likes to see credentials, makes them happy. They go, oh, this person really is an expert. They have 93 letters after their name, right? Right. I've got a bunch of letters after my name. It doesn't make you an expert, but hey, people think. It means you have a lot of schooling. But so sometimes you have layers of experts. And sometimes your expert is the media spokesperson. Remember, we're going to have one because we don't like people to just blog and make comments about what's going on when it's going on. No, first of all, it's useless. Second of all, it's going to be misquoted. And third of all, it's going to have nothing to do with our final product, our final idea, right? Do not do it. It's my rule. You cannot. This is against the civility rules and everything else. In fact, I have a no cell phone and like that rule. You're not supposed to touch. You're supposed to leave it in your pocket. I used to confiscate. Yes, people are mad at confiscating. I used to confiscate before the generation where people regard their phone as an extension of their hand, and it's like asking them to leave their fingers. They don't want to let it out of their sight. They don't want to. They don't want it to commingle. They don't want. They want to leave. They swear they'll leave it in their pocket. And then you see them catching a little glance, but not actually using it and blocking and like that. Yeah, no, we have a rule about it. Mm-hmm. Yes, sometimes the media spokesperson is us. Depends if we're the best choice. The media also likes credentials. They like to see lots of letters. It makes them happy and makes them feel like you really know something. Mm-hmm. We also need some research, right? In order to get some empathy and understand what the problems are, right? Today in the internet, you can validate the most craziest, most awfulest, the most really ideas on the face of the earth. You can find a whole group of people who think that too. No, do not stop when something agrees with you. Let's find out what's out there. Let's find out what other people think, right? Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, people kind of research and then they go, well, I'm right. I'm so happy. And they don't research a little further and find out there's other ideas that think they're right too. Let's get together. Mm-hmm. Now, what we're really talking about now is getting together and like that. That's a civility solution, right? Your problem is that you don't think you can civility to reign, right? Yeah. Okay, the first thing you do, and I truly recommend this, I literally do it. Even if I have seen this exact group of people before, as in we're really familiar with each other, when I take on a group, when I take on a leadership, I announce that about the civility rules, we would act with respect to one another and not be rude in any way. And I announce they're in force, and I enforce immediately, consistently, and fairly. Immediately, consistently, and fairly. Do not, in my opinion, do not wait until things go uncivil and then say, oh, you know the civility rules from before that I announced about a month ago? Now they're in force. No, It's too darn late. I mean, I've seen it, but it's not. You got to establish it first, because then you already got people quitting. Mm-hmm. Because they're unhappy. They don't have a convivial atmosphere. Mm-hmm. Now, how are we going to enforce the civility rules? Because there's always someone who wants to be a bully. Or maybe they've got a hidden agenda, right? Uh-huh. And not that hidden, even. They would like, perhaps, to see the group fail, which we're going to talk about the next time, in the next part of the show. You need to be able to answer when you say we're going to enforce the civility rules and like that. And they're just words, right? Right. You need to have an answer to the either implied, I have personally actually seen it said out loud and literally more than once, because I deal with those kind of people. But you must have an answer to the question for some sort of a bully who's not being civil. What you gonna do about it? What you gonna do about it if I'm not civil? Yeah, it's kind of a make me. What you gonna do about it? Make me. Mm-hmm. And the answer, there should be an answer to that. And the answer should be good. It should be serious. It should be something tangible that we all can see and we all would not like to lose. Because we're going to enforce publicly is a bad example to us all, or a good example, depending on how you want to look at it, right? Which means that before you start, you need to be sure that you've got the employer's backing, because the employer is the one that has the civility rule penalty, right? The answer to what you're going to do about it. And it should be something substantial. Should impact your employment. Should impact your pocketbook. Should impact your standing with your peers. Should impact in some way that you would find undesirable and you don't want it to. No, we're not going to kill somebody, but we might demote them. We might have a fine for uncivil behavior. That's and it'll cost you money out of your paycheck, right? People don't like that. Believe me, people don't believe that that'll happen. The first time makes the whole place more civil, right away. It's like, yeah, this is you're going to have your paycheck docked. Mm-hmm. People are asking how much. It depends on the circumstances. I do not like a sliding scale for how uncivil were you? Because we're not going to do uncivil altogether. However, if it's a pretty darn big penalty, I might give a warning the first time. Right? Yeah. Especially, all right, I'm a lawyer. I guess I see this a lot. Especially if someone has that kind of a personality, and they have to really make a conscious effort to be civil. So they need to have the warning first, right? Yeah. There are some people, and it has stood them well, especially in the legal profession. I must confess this. I don't act like this because it's not my nature. But there are some people who everything that comes out of their mouth seems like a fight, seems sarcastic, seems nasty, right? Yeah, they can say hello, and it's like, what do you want? It's just, bleh. And you have to kind of take them aside and tell them that it needs to be toned down because they don't realize it because it works for them. Mm-hmm. And they've gotten kind of tone deaf, right? And even if it's not working for them, they think it's working for them. That's how I am. Well, yeah. Let's try to go for a more group feel to that. Mm-hmm. Believe me, a monetary fine helps. Some groups people are still asking about exactly how much of a fine. Enough that is a deterrent. Now, some groups are kind of naturally convivial, and they've got kind of history together. I'm going to use Rotary as an example, right? A lot of you know I'm a Rotarian. It's a service organization, all volunteers. We come together usually once a week for some sort of oftentimes food. I know none of this is as applicable at the moment, but God willing, things will get better. And we do good things, right? At the moment, my Rotary Club, because they're all called clubs, each group, which is pretty big, and if I may say, somewhat prosperous, we have professional staff and like that. We've actually put all of our work and effort and resources and volunteerism and like that into helping medical staff and first responders with the coronavirus, right? Yeah. So we have kind of, we've gone forward. Yeah. And it's real important, and it is necessary, and it is something that is very much needed, and we can do that. So, but see, we make decisions as a group and then go forward and implement. Yeah, actually in volunteering, yes. And yes, I do have a face mask, yes. And gloves, yes. And this is nice, you guys. People are like, are you sure? Yeah, I'm positive we're fine. And but at a group like that, the penalty for example, saying a dirty word or getting tense would be putting $5 in the swear jar, right? But it's in front of everybody, and you remember because there's peer pressure not to get testy, even though we're tired, and even though, I don't know, some sort of an idiot mixed something up, right? Yeah, but you're not supposed to call them an idiot because it's un-Rotarian-like. Yeah, so that kind of stuff. In a corporate setting, $10,000 might be needed because otherwise it's not money. $1,000 would not be money, right? So you have to take it to whatever it is, whatever level your group is what you decide for how much. Mm-hmm. You, of course, must always be a model of civility, right? Yes. You cannot enforce what you do not do. A model of civility, no matter what gets on your nerves. Yes, the question is always asked somewhere along the line, what happens if I can't? What happens if it's been a really long day and somebody really pushes my buttons and I just can't pull out civility? I lose it for a minute there. Well, I'm assuming that you haven't done anything really, really bad, right? You don't have to recuse yourself. You haven't done anything that can't be taken back. I admit it. I explain it. I apologize. I give myself a warning. Unless you won't give anyone else a warning, and then I pay the fine, right? Yeah. No. People appreciate the fact that you are under civility rules, too. And believe me, if you do it one time, you won't do it again. You need to model civility. You need to also model enthusiasm. Our next topic is going to be the preconception of failure as a problem. You've got a group that is really, really certain this is not going to work, right? Mm-hmm. First of all, you're going to model civility, but you're also going to model enthusiasm. I think this is going to work, and I have experience in these matters, right? Which gives you some gravitas. Mm-hmm. Or I have brought in someone with experience in these matters if you don't have any, because a lot of you are newish. Mm-hmm. Now, what gives a preconception of failure? Sometimes it is just as never been done in the world, right? People have tried, kind of those people over there somewhere in the past have tried. It's never worked. It's always been an idea. It seems like a good idea, but in reality, not so much, right? Right, no. And then there is the group where they have failed, right? Personally, they as a group, they have not succeeded. in reaching compromise and reaching agreement and going forward. And if I have a specialty, which you get kind of a specialty because you're good at it, that kind of group is my specialty. I'm the new sheriff in town, right? Yes. And a lot of times these groups have a hidden agenda, not so hidden even, because the prior leader who failed is now a participant, and his or her clique, the people that backed them, are now participants. And it would be, and this is just human nature, we have to accept this, it would be better if I failed as leader too. Because then they could say to the employer, remember it's a generic, even Sue couldn't get this to go. Even Sue couldn't get this done. Even Sue failed, right? Yeah, you see, that would make them seem less stupid than if I show up and I'm like, well, this is what we're going to do, sit down and shut up. There we go. And, yeah, no, model enthusiasm, and you have to understand that failure, again, is not an option and that circumstances have changed. It's not so, I like to have people think it's not so much that they were idiots, even if I think they were, but it would now, this is in place, this being me usually, and we're going to go forward and think about it from a different angle. Even if it's the same angle, we're going to think about it from a different angle because it saves face. How come I can do it and you can't, right? Mm-hmm. We're going to think outside the box. Yes, the next thing we're going to talk about is defining success. And when you've got a failure preconception, sometimes they need to redefine success, right? Yes, or just define success. How are you going to know what you're supposed to do and where you're headed if you don't know what success looks like, right? Yeah, so we're going to need to know at least, okay, we're going to start out with a definition that needs to be flexible. Because as we get into it, it may change, right? Yeah, it's not always exactly the same. But there's a pretty good chance that what we started with will be modified, but we'll be part of it, right? How to define success. Depending on if success is real obvious, like winning a political spot. That, you know what I mean. It sometimes success is not as obvious. And so who defines success? Initially the employer. They have to understand that they need to be flexible. Because what they think right now, before any of the research and the experts and the negotiation and like that, is probably not exactly what's going to show up at the very end. But we can work with what's going to show up at the very end, right? Because that's our successful outcome. Sometimes they ask the leader to define success. Depends on the group. Depends on the whole bit. Depends on the employer. I do like input, even if I'm the final say. Because then people feel invested. They feel that they are part of the process and not just being told what to do. They are a part of deciding what to do. And that makes a big difference to most people. Mm-hmm. Sometimes circumstances define success. Public opinion, media, circumstances, stuff changes. Sometimes it's even a thing like a scientific breakthrough. Or a technology breakthrough, or something like that, which changes how we think about it, changes what needs to be done, changes what direction we should go, right? Right. Mm-hmm. Yes. People are asking if I give an estimate. You need to be, the employer is usually the one you talk to for this, needs to be flexible with both time and money. If I'm given a deadline, I want to know why. Now, if it's a real deadline, as in it must be filed by this date. That's something, and we will meet it. But if it's a soft deadline and just say that would be nice so I can go, I don't know, put my feet up on vacation and not worry about this. But if not, we're just going to push it back, which means there's no deadline at all. I don't like a deadline like that, and I won't accept it. I won't tell anybody about it. We'll go as fast as we can and as efficiently as possible. Right? Right. If I need to make an estimate, the employer insists, for example, I estimate fairly big in time and money, right? I think you should go big because you might need the time and the money. You never know. You don't want to have to ask again because that really does look not good. Makes it seem like you don't know what you're doing. It's taken an awful long time to get there. But if you come in under time and under budget, your reputation is going to skyrocket. Everybody knows that Sue can get it done, right? Right. Mm-hmm. The last thing we're going to talk about, and I'm afraid we have run out of time for the recipes, so we'll try to get to them next time. Eventually I get to them. This is true. Yeah. But we've had such a good conversation. Thank you all for being here. The next time we're going to talk about is expanding our comfort zone, right? And I like to call it expanding. No one wants to leave. If it was a bad thing, it wouldn't be called the comfort zone, right? Right. But people understand that sometimes you got to step back, right? And still remain in the comfort zone, but modify it. Mm-hmm. And you need reasons. People have to understand how come. And not just because new is better, because it's not necessarily. I need to have a reason to push to leave the comfort zone. I need to know why, right? Yeah. And I need to understand, and you need to understand, employer, fellow participants, media, public opinion, that we are honoring the past, which is the comfort zone, how things have always been done, while looking forward to the future, right? Yeah. That's a pleasant idea, right? Right. Not just stop that. It's stupid. This is the modern world. Mm-mm-mm-mm-mm. We will go forward gently when it comes to comfort zones. My friends, we are out of time. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for all of your participation. We'll get to the recipes next time, hopefully. I know I promise it and then it takes a few weeks, but we get there. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. If you want to find us, word recipe for peace now at gmail.com. The website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Prior shows, they're archived on that website. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all of your participation. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.